Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Planet Zorg. And I'm joined once again by Mr. Zorg. What's up, man?
Greetings.
Yes. So tell me, my friend, you told me to watch Midnight Meat Train.
Well, I didn't tell you to watch it. I recommended it. I didn't issue a command of any sort.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was command. But anyway, I watched it. It was good. It was an entertaining movie.
Yeah.
And not
Halloween movie.
Yes. And not well known either, because I had never even heard about it. When did it come out? Like 2004 or something?
Yeah. No, I think a little more recently than that. Pardon me.
2007, actually.
2007, yeah, because it was before Bradley Cooper became well known, which was like a year or so later with The Hangover. And it got a fair amount of press in the horror film community at the time. But I never bothered to watch it at the time because I'd been, a lot of Clive Barker projects.
Is it bad?
I'm sorry?
Clive Barker, of course, is the guy who wrote the short story. Had you originally read it?
I haven't read the short story. I've read a lot of Clive Barker, but I haven't read that story to the best of my recollection.
I mean, he's directed stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah. I think he directed Nightbreed.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that. But I guess he's up there with like Wes Craven and...
Well, you can't really compare him to Wes Craven because he's an author primarily. Wes Craven is a film director.
So this movie, though, is just he wrote it and the director is somebody different.
Japanese guy, I think.
Yeah. And I found that the plot points, I mean, the characters, like, did stuff that didn't necessarily seem, like, plausible on some level. But at the same time, like, there was a kind of a stylized quality to the film that...
You're right.
I mean, it works internally with the movie, but like if you look at it from like when the girlfriend goes over to the guy's camera, like it just I don't think any girl would do that. But anyway.
Yeah. The thing is, and again, I haven't read the story on which it's based, but it all has to tie into the ending, which is and it's kind of a formulaic ending.
Sure.
I've seen that same ending in quite a few films and plays. I mean, not just horror films, but like comedies and stuff too. There's a pretty famous one act play by Dan Greenberg called The Restaurant, where like the one character sort of does that morphing at the end. And it's a comedy, not a horror.
This had some comedic elements, though. I mean, I laughed at certain points.
I think you're supposed to.
Yeah. And it's a lot of superficial, like, characters, but at the same time, you know, like, sort of stock characters. But the main character is sort of a weirdo, and he doesn't really comport to anything. I mean, I really didn't
main
know.
Character, do you mean the Vinnie Jones character or the Brad Cooper character?
Brad Cooper.
Oh, okay.
Well, even she's, she's the typical, like, nagging girlfriend, I guess, but...
Vinnie Jones could kind of be viewed as the main character.
Yeah, you mean the killer?
Yeah.
And he was good. I mean, he was good as a killer, definitely.
He's really an underrated actor. He's great in those kind of tough guy, scary dude roles. He's probably best known for his performances in Guy Ritchie movies.
Yeah, wasn't he in that Brad Pitt movie where Brad has that weird accent? I forget what it's called.
It's called Snatch, and he is in that movie. Yeah.
That movie's awesome. But now, when this thing opens up, you basically, it's this guy who's a photographer, and he takes pictures of people I think the first thing we see is a kill from this subway, and so these murders where people are just disappearing.
The first you're talking about is photographs. The first thing we see is him photographing that chick who then gets killed.
Well, actually, before that, there's an opening before credit scene where a bald guy is kind of in the subway and he gets gutted and he's like,
oh yeah.
He's slipping around in his own blood, and then he sees in the other train like him just like pounding using that meat pounder on somebody's face. That thing was really brutal. That the kills in this are disgusting. I mean, they're
pretty awesome.
they're very graphic, and you see eyeballs flying and stuff like that. But what's weird is that, you know, the twist and then like what gets sort of established in the universe of this movie about why this is happening, but we'll talk about that. But basically, people are disappearing. They have been for like
100 years.
Yeah, 100 years. And the guy who's doing the killing is this weird kind of, you know, he's almost like a Terminator guy. I mean, he's just very
he's emotionless. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's growing some weird lesions that he cuts off and keeps in a jar, which I didn't understand that. But
it's never explained. It's just like it's some weird. I'm pretty sure that's from the book. I'm pretty sure, or the story. I'm pretty sure Clive Barker actually wrote that just to be weird. The story is set in New York, although I have no clue what fucking city it's shot in.
You're right. It's the subway. I guess that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be New York, but it's
supposed to be New York.
The subways look different, and the subway stops are not any I recognize. I mean,
they're not. That's because there's no streets.
Right. Yeah, there was one like Beale Street. So I was like, what the hell is Beale?
Beale Street's isn't there a Beale Street in Memphis? But I lived in Memphis, and I don't remember a subway.
Well, in any case, they make the subways look somewhat like New York, and maybe it's like filmed in like Canada or something.
Probably that's usually where New York stuff is filmed if it's not filmed in New York. Although, sorry, Stanley Kubrick did film Eyes Wide Shut in London.
Yes. And there are parts of London that look like the East Village.
Yeah, it's actually they look like the West Village.
That's right, more like the West Village. Yeah, but in this, so this guy is he's a photographer. It looks like he's just kind of taking pictures on his own accord here, not doing too well. He looks like he's unemployed and not really like doing that well. He's got a girlfriend that has some. And a friend that has some connections, so that they get him an interview with none other than Brooke Shields,
who's very very good in the part.
Yeah, I mean she plays sort of like the classic, you know, pretentious art dealer type.
Yeah.
And she's
really good, and she's still cute.
That she has, she is. I mean, I guess those Latisse eyelashes are working out for her. You know, those genetic, you know, those things that she was selling for a while. You take a pill and your eyelashes grow.
It's not a pill. It's you have to brush it on. I have a friend who actually takes it. You know this person too. But it worked.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you have to brush it on your eyelashes. And it can have side effects, like it can make extra your eyelashes. It can also get into your system and cause, like, hair growth elsewhere. But my friend...
You there?
Yeah, my friend who does it has...
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You cut out there for a second.
It does have, like, listed side effects, but my friend who uses it has not had any of the listed side effects.
Yeah. Well, in any case, she's very good, yeah. So she sees him, and she's kind of impressed, but at the same time she wants a little more from him. I personally don't see what she sees in his photos.
Yeah, they're kind of generic.
It's just like guys on subways and bums and stuff. And so, he's a little bit, he's encouraged to bring back something a little better. And so he goes off and starts kind of being a little more intense about his surveillance of people and trying to get closer to more problem situations instead of staying so far away. And in one case, like you were talking about, there was this girl getting harassed by this group of guys, and he starts photo, and he kind of prevents them from raping her and killing her.
He points out to them that their present actions are on surveillance tape. He points to the subway video camera above them.
Yeah, so they don't mess with him, and they let the girl go. But meanwhile, she goes from there into a worse situation where and where she gets butchered by this night killer on the subway.
Right.
Now,
she's cute, too.
Yes, very. At the same time, she's, I guess, like, in many ways, like, he gets her killed because, I mean, I don't know what would have happened to her at the hands of these thugs, but...
They gang raped her, I'm pretty sure. That seems to have been their goal.
Yeah, well, or just harassed her heavily, you know, until she got away. But in any case, she dies. She gets, like, brutally slammed in the face with the meat pounder. And he later reads about it in the paper and makes the connection. So he's starting to, like, sense that, he even goes to the police, and they think that he might be the killer because, like, he's got all these pictures of this woman who's been killed, and she.
Although it turns out they have nobody actually thinks that.
Yeah, well, he happens to be. She happens to be like a minor celebrity of some sort, so they kind of think that he might be a stalker. But we find out.
I mean the police, the inspector that he speaks with doesn't actually believe that he did it because she knows who did it.
Right, right. She's actually in on it, which we find out later that it's this weird thing. And it's hard to say what the actual, I mean, they don't really flesh out exactly what's going on, but that just suffice to say that there are people that are on the inside that are privy to this killing, and they allow it.
The killing is for a purpose. It's not just random killing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. So he's kind of frustrated by their lack of concern here. But at the same time, he continues to take pictures, and he starts actually taking a show. He's looking at when the subway lets out, and he sees this guy, this lone guy, leaving the subway, and he follows him to a butcher shop at the meatpacking district, and he sees that he works there, and I don't know, he just thinks he's strange, and he sees him, I guess he keeps repeatedly seeing him and just noticing that, you know, this is a guy that's always there. I guess he just starts to suspect him, but then he takes some pictures, and I think he matches up the ring from what he saw in the guy, a ring that he was wearing, to some pictures that he took, and so he starts to see that this dude is the killer. Or, yeah, when that guy opens up the door for the girl running away from those thugs, he sees that ring, and that's how he knows that this guy is. But no one really believes him. Then he keeps doing research. He keeps doing research, and he's noticing that there's this guy that he's been suspected of killing, like, back in, like, 100 years ago or something, right?
Right, right.
I mean, so, like, he's still never been caught for it, or it's never been pinned on him, but apparently he's been doing this for some time and hasn't aged at all. I guess he's deteriorating. I mean, he's got some kind of...
It's a little unclear there. I mean, the murders have been occurring for that long, but do we actually know that the Vinnie Jones character is the one who was doing the murders?
Or he just always happens to be a butcher that is doing it. So,
right.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't think there's any suspension of natural law regarding. Excuse me.
Okay. So this guy, he keeps kind of following him, and the guy eventually notices that he's following him, and but it, you know, and they're in. I think he's even confronted by the guy, and then it becomes pretty damn clear that this. And in the meantime, he's been taking pictures, and he's given more to Brooke Shields' character. She's decided to put him in her show.
Right.
So you know, he just keeps going through this realization, and no one really wants to listen to him. His girlfriend doesn't want to have anything to do with it. She's just kind of like wants him to get his pictures and then stop doing the night shoots and stop getting involved with this thing. But he brings his case to the detective. The detective is just kind of doesn't even care. And then at one point we get some more kills. We get like a real brutal kill of like a two guys and a girl, where the girl's basically head gets like bashed off.
Yeah.
I mean, some really brutal stuff. And then there's one scene with Rampage Jackson in it, where he's gives quite a fight to the guy, and they have and then the train driver has to step in and shoot him.
Yeah, the driver actually intervenes. That's the first time that we get the hint that this guy maybe isn't acting alone, that he has confederates.
Right. And we start to see that there's more in on this than just this one lone killer. And you wonder how this guy could get away with it. It's suspected by Bradley Cooper that he's been bringing the bodies to his butcher shop to get rid of. But I think we find out that actually it's going somewhere quite different.
Yeah, but, yeah. No, it's not going to like, people aren't getting them and eating.
So he continues to kind of surveil this guy. He actually ends up donning a butcher outfit and going into the butcher shop and photographing him there. And he gets noticed and chased down and there's a great scene where he's in the butcher plant being stalked by this guy. He gets away, and he's, I think at this point he's, he witnesses a murder in the, after he's following this guy around, he finally sees him kill somebody in the subway, and then the guy attacks him. And then he's basically gets like this crazy scar on his chest. Looks like almost like a branding or something. He's all fucked up, and he's about to, he's telling his girlfriend all about it. And at this point, he had the pictures of the killing so that he could prove it, but the camera was taken away from him by the killer. So he tells this to his girlfriend, who decides, okay, you go to the hospital, or you get, you know, clean yourself up, and I'll go with my friend here to find that guy's camera. So she goes over to the killer's apartment, which to me seemed unlikely. But
it's a room in a hotel.
Yeah. And she starts looking around with her friend, and they eventually find the camera, but time her friend, who's also the friend of Bradley Cooper, is killed. Pretty
well, he's not killed.
Oh, that's right. He's just slashed or whatever, or bashed. Yeah. Half dead. And hung up in a by his ankle like a side of beef. Which I don't know if they're trying to make a commentary on animal cruelty. I don't know. But,
I think so.
She eventually goes to the police herself. They don't want to listen to her. They actually want to charge her for breaking and entering into this guy's house. She steals some kind of train schedule or...
It's a train schedule that links up to, it corresponds to to the disappearances of people over a 100-year period.
Yeah, so the idea is that we have all these unsolved disappearances. And, I mean, it kind of, in a way, like retcons all the disappearances that you've seen in the city. Maybe they were all by this guy. And where we can't find a body, we can't find anything, people just vanish. And this itinerary kind of where he has certain times scribbled off and circled.
Yes, specific trains on the schedule.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's sort of vague proof. It's not really enough. And the camera, I don't think they actually get the camera with the pictures on it.
No.
So the cop has nothing to go on. In any case, she's in cahoots too, so she's not going to really follow up on it. He eventually then goes, he takes matters into his own hands and just goes to find out what's going on with this killer. And they basically, I think he ends up getting into a battle with him and killing him, or almost kill, or basically incapacitating him to the point where they get to the end of the line on this meat train, and where they are being, he sees that the bodies are being devoured by these like subhuman, like cannibals or something. I'm not sure.
Well, if they're not humans, so they're not cannibals. It looks like they're some kind of, you know, chthonic beings, or, you know, something like that. Not exactly people, like from somewhere else.
Yeah, they're from an, they're like, you know, we need, in order to satisfy some kind of harmony between the two realms, maybe they're from another dimension. That these are kind of like offerings that keep the peace.
Yes.
And that the humans that know and learn about it are kind of condemned to help out in the effort.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, yeah.
And so when they see, it's like he's there, and then I think his girlfriend's there too, because she went looking for the butcher guy. And then he kind of rescues her initially from getting killed, but then he eventually, like, they kill her, and they cut out Bradley Cooper's tongue. I guess so he can't tell about what he's seen.
Either that, or it's so that he can't eat his girlfriend's pussy anymore. It's one of those two things.
Yeah, one of the two. Well, his girlfriend's dead, so I don't know how he'd do that. But in any case,
you could still eat pussy if she's dead.
Oh, God, yeah. A pleasure indeed. So he's all of a sudden we see toward the end that he's now the new killer. And whether he's growing little growths on his chest, cutting them off and eating them, we don't know. But we assume so, because it looks like...
I didn't assume that. It did hurt me, because it doesn't seem to necessarily be something that takes on that.
Well, it seems like, you know, you're going to be tormented on some level by God for engaging in this kind of behavior. It reminded me of kind of the biblical lesions that people get, or at least that I think Job got, where, like, he got, like, hit.
Job, the book of Job is a parable. It's not supposed to be a historical commentary.
No, but, I mean, isn't there some kind of biblical, like, I just remember one biblical figure getting, like, these lesions on him.
Job was covered in sores, but...
Okay, well, whatever. I mean,
the story of Job is a parable.
Yeah. Let's hope. So in any case, it's a weird movie. I mean, I guess the ending is sort of formulaic, but it's cool. Like, it's good. It's a good watch all the way through, and it's tense.
Yeah, it's a good watch. It's totally, like, I would completely recommend it for Halloween viewing. And by Halloween viewing, I mean watching horror movies every night between now and Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that many that really great ones, I don't think.
Well, you know what? I was at a bar the other night, and the bartender was playing Drag Me to Hell, which I think is a pretty fucking good scary movie.
It is.
Watching it half-assed, but I've seen the movie before, and I liked it a great deal. It's very creepy, and it's a good horror movie.
Yeah, it's good. Now is that a remake?
No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah, because it's just it's cool, and it has like a pretty. I mean, I guess it's the last girl doesn't make it to the end. But the movie, I mean, you could imagine this Midnight Meat Train, like them coming out with like a bunch of sequels on straight to video or something. But I don't, you know, we'll see.
Yes, I mean it. You know, that would be about as workable as the later Hellraisers.
Or the Leprechaun series.
I was using Hellraiser specifically because it's Clive Barker.
Oh, there you go. I mean that series. I mean, I don't know how many sequels they had of Hellraiser.
I think there's 8 Hellraiser movies all in all, not counting a reboot and an upcoming reboot. Those are totally different. But I think there's 8. But like the last one, I have them all. But the last.
So you're a big Hellraiser guy.
What?
You like Hellraiser? You like you some Hellraiser?
Yeah. I think that the first 4 Hellraiser movies are very, very good. I mean, most people consider the first 3 to be canonical. I'll actually include it delves into the backstory.
It's can you explain the Hellraiser figure and what he is?
Do you mean Pinhead?
Yeah.
He's a Cenobite.
And what does that mean?
Well, actual Cenobites, were a sect of ascetics, people who deprived themselves to achieve enlightenment. But these Cenobites are just self-described as bringers of pleasure and pain, although I never see any pleasure. They are kind of keepers of hell, and they're assigned to give specific torments to people in this hell-type place, which sometimes occurs on Earth.
So these people deserve it?
Well, no, it's not a question of deserving it. If you solve the puzzle box, if you solve the lament configuration, that's what it's called, then the Cenobites appear, and unless you can cut a deal with them, they're going to take you to hell.
I see. So this is not, I mean, because I actually never even saw one. So you think, like, the first one is the best one?
Yeah, first one's a classic.
And it's scary?
It's pretty scary.
Okay, because, I mean, it's 80s, right?
It's what? 89. 88 or 89, I'm not sure which.
And which ones were theatrical? I mean, only the first couple, right?
No. I'm pretty sure the first 6 were theatrical releases.
And I think after a while, the main guy crapped out on it completely. He didn't want
to. Doug Bradley was in all of those movies, although he appears very briefly in the last one. Doug Bradley and Clive Barker are very good friends. They've known each other for like 50 years.
Doug Bradley's Pinhead?
Doug Bradley plays the role of Pinhead, yeah. And also the human character of Pinhead in the third movie.
Oh, so he manifests as a human in the third?
No, there's a backstory. He didn't always used to be Pinhead.
Oh, he started out a good, mild-mannered man.
Yeah.
I just remember seeing the image of Pinhead and never understanding how he got those pins in his head. But
they're not pins. They're finishing nails.
Finishing nails, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he's up there with Jason and Freddy and Connor.
I don't know if you could really make that comparison. He's not. I mean, he's not a mass murderer or serial mass murderer, for one thing. That's not what he does. What he does is assigned to the realm of the supernatural.
Does he ever speak?
Yeah, he speaks all the time.
Oh, okay. And what is his, like, so these movies, they center around just like a few kind of characters that being tormented by this guy?
Well, I think the only character that recurs other than the Cenobites, specifically Pinhead, is the character of the daughter from the first movie. She's in a few movies, but ultimately they kill her off.
They do. And is it just that the writing just gets poorer and poorer with the sequel?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Like, by the time the fourth movie rolls around, which again, I actually like the fourth movie, even though a lot of people don't. At that point, the direction is credited to Alan Smithy, and I don't know if you're familiar with what that means.
I don't.
Alan Smithy is a fiction. If directors quit movies and they don't want their names assigned to it, or if there's more than two directors that worked on a movie, it automatically gets credited to Alan Smithy.
I never knew that. That's funny.
Yeah, it's usually a sign of a shitty movie.
Well, yeah, speaking of, I mean, there's a lot of, these B movie franchises. I mean, I wouldn't call Hellraiser one of them. I mean, I guess now it is, but I guess it started out pretty big, right?
No, I mean, horror movies are pretty much always B-type movies, with very few exceptions. Silence of the Lambs is an exception.
Is that really horror, or is that more like a...
Silence of the Lambs is a horror movie.
Yeah, I guess. But the other ones, like Hannibal and Red Dragon, would you call those horror movies?
No, Red Dragon is a psychological thriller. Red Dragon before Red Dragon. Manhunter.
Yeah, Manhunter.
Yeah, yeah. But and there's a second... There's a second movie, is there not? A second Silence of the Lambs movie before Hannibal?
Oh, there was the one where it was played by a young guy. It was like Young Hannibal or something, where he... It's like
no,
a prequel.
I don't count that. But how many movies have Julianne Moore in them?
Oh, just one, I believe.
Oh, okay. Then never mind. I'm thinking of Hannibal.
Yeah, because they came out with... Red Dragon, which was kind of a remake of Manhunter.
Red Dragon is the name of the book.
Right. And, have you watched both Red Dragon and Manhunter?
Yes.
Do you find them one better than the other?
I don't like either movie.
Yeah. Although, you got to give Tom Noonan credit for that, being the killer in Manhunter. I thought he was... Quite
Except
scary.
He's not Dollar High. That's neither of those guys is Dollar High.
I see. They don't really capture the book
no.
character.
No, but honestly, like, if I had to cast Dollar High, I would cast like Glenn Danzig.
Now, what did you think of the casting for Silence of the Lambs of the main killer? There, that was pretty good, right?
Oh, Ted Levine. Yeah. I like him a lot. He's a very, very good actor.
Yeah, and he did a good job in that. I mean, would you say that's the best adaptation? Silence?
It's the only adaptation. There is no other version of Silence of the Lambs.
No, I just mean of all the books written by this guy, the guy who wrote Silence of the Lambs.
Well, he also wrote Black Sunday, let's not forget.
But, I mean, I'm just saying that of all the movies that are based in this universe... which one do you think is the best one?
Silence of the Lambs.
And it's a, it was supposed to be, wasn't it supposed to be the cop from Manhunter is the main character for that?
No.
Or,
no.
Okay. So he,
no. No. The movie is a pretty faithful recreation of the book.
I see. So the Clarice is part of that.
Yeah. The only thing that changes with Clarice is she gets played by a different actress in the sequel.
Right. I guess Jodie didn't want to do it.
I have no clue why she's not in the sequel. I know that Julianne Moore has nice feet. And we went to the same high school.
That's right. Well, in any case, she's good in it. And although I don't think it did well, or I think it did well in the box office, but I don't know if it got...
It did poorly critically.
Yeah. But...
Because it's not a very good movie. The production values are high, and they got, like, top-notch actors, but it's not a good movie.
Yeah, it's not... I don't think any of them... I mean, I guess Red Dragon was okay.
Except I have a problem with the antagonist not being the antagonist from the book.
But why do you think the antagonist of the book was better?
I didn't say he was better. He's the one in the book.
I see, but I mean, do you think...
Well, actually, he is better because of his physicality, you understand that he's compensating for something, and he makes it, like, very apparent what he's compensating for. I don't think the Rafe... If I'm wrong, but I don't remember the Rafe Fiennes character having a speech impediment.
Oh, he did have a cleft lip, but that's about it, and it was very slight.
He didn't have the associated speech impediment, and the speech impediment is actually kind of important.
Yeah, but he did okay. I mean,
he's fine, but he's not that character.
Right. I think though that they wanted to make him more for the movie to look more innocent, but I don't know what his character looked like in the book, but he certainly looked like less of a weirdo than Mr. Noonan. But
well, Tom Noonan looks like a weirdo in every role he takes.
He's good, though. He's a good actor.
He's a good actor.
Yeah, I know he teaches acting in the city. He has, like, small little classes that you can take, or like playwriting or something like that, but or play acting. But he still manages to get work, that guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's a good character actor.
Now, in terms of horror movies, like for Halloween, do you recommend any of the Friday the 13th series? Or
I hate the Friday the 13th series. I find them unwatchable.
They are pretty bad.
Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, I guess for camp value, you could watch the first one.
Yeah, but that's not really a Jason movie. It's kind of like...
It's really about his mom.
Right. But at the same time, it's...
Jason's revealed at the end.
It's kind of a ripoff of Psycho in many ways.
Except for the ending.
Right. But, I mean, even Psycho, I mean, what's your feeling on that franchise?
Psycho, I think, is a good movie. I think that that the sequel, the immediate sequel, is good. Anything else, sucks.
Yeah, they went crazy with that franchise too. I mean, they just milk everything to death.
Yeah, and it didn't start happening until the 80s. Like, I guess it was the mid 80s when they did Psycho 2. And then they did, like, a Psycho 3 with Olivia Hussey, I think, is in it, Bates Motel, and then there's an actual remake of Psycho. I think maybe Abel Ferrara directed it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, the one with Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, Vince Vaughn and that chick who used to pretend to be a lesbian.
Anne Hecht. Have you checked out the Halloweens?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Halloween series either.
Number 3 was a weird one.
Yeah, it's okay. I do like Rob Zombie's remake of Halloween. A lot of people hate it, but I like Rob Zombie. I think he makes good movies.
Yeah, I think actually that's a little bit better than the real one.
I think. But a lot of people really have problems with it, I think because they've been told to have problems with it.
Well, at least he used the same music. He didn't try to change that. But I thought it stayed kind of faithful to the original, except for it had more backstory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a horror aficionado. I don't think he would really depart from the story.
I wonder if he's going to make the third one as it was, or if he's just going to go and make... I mean, I feel like he will make a third one.
I have no clue.
But it'd be interesting if you did that. I think there was a lot of potential in that third one, but, you know, it was kind of a stupid story as well. But
yeah,
that one scene where the bugs are coming out of the face, the mask, is pretty horrific.
I do like Rob Zombie's two films, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. I think those are both fun movies. There's nothing new happening there. They're basically remakes of Texas Chainsaw, but they're fun movies.
Yeah, they are. And they are definitely a tribute to the Texas Chainsaw, which was really a horrific cutting-edge movie at the time. Very graphic.
Yeah, yeah. Tobe Hooper, that's his thing. And it spawned an entire subgenre in horror, like you know, Wrong Turn. What's another one there's like five different movies that do the Texas Chainsaw thing. Plus, I think there's four separate remakes of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, and the one that came out in the early 2000s, I think with Jessica Biel, that's pretty good.
That's a pretty good one. There's also one with Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey from the 90s.
Oh, but I know that the ones that recently came out were pretty bad. I haven't seen them, but I heard that they were. But yeah. So and then have you checked out the Saw series?
Yeah, I stopped watching around Saw 3. It just started getting old.
Got ridiculous.
Yeah. I like Hostel and Hostel 2, although Hostel 2 unfortunately killed Heather Matarazzo's career.
Why? Because they didn't make money?
Because she chose to do a graphic nude scene in which she gets, violently murdered. And it's cool. I mean, you know, I like Heather Matarazzo. I think she's a terrific actress. And I remember when she did Welcome to the Dollhouse, when she was, in her early teens, I said, she's never going to be, a hot chick, but she's going to be, very attractive in her own way. And she did grow up to be very attractive. And I really enjoyed seeing Heather naked. And Heather, if you're listening to this, come on over. You could give me an old fashioned. And I don't mean a donut either by old fashioned.
Right. Why don't you just spell out what an old fashioned means in the sexual context? Because I'm not sure.
Oh, an old fashioned is a hand job.
Oh. So you're still fond of these hand? That's it's almost like a middle.
It's my preferred means of sexual gratification. If you want to be really specific about it.
I thought you wanted a foot job.
No, those are okay, but they're awkward, and you know, you got to have the right arches for it. Those are fine, you know, but very few women are skilled at giving foot jobs. I've found that a lot of women who are really, you know, who give expert old fashions were virgins till relatively late in their sexual careers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
they're probably good at the fellatio too, probably better than most.
Well, it depends. I mean, I had a Scientologist girlfriend, you know, 20 odd years ago, who I think was a virgin until she was 25, and she just gave amazing old fashions. Her old fashions were really, really, really good, and I complimented her on her old fashions many times.
Well, it's a big business here in the city with these massage parlors.
I've never done the massage parlor trip. I don't have a problem with chicks. Well, for one thing, I have a girlfriend, but it's when I was between girlfriends, I never had a problem with chicks turning down my request for a hand job. That's, you know, most of them have been rather eager to give one.
So anyway, she'll show up at your apartment tonight after your
invitation. Yeah. I mean, you never know, Heather. So you can call into the show if you want, and or you can email me at sharkexpert@gmail.com, and I'll totally give you directions to my house. But you have to hurry because my girlfriend's going to be home sometime this evening.
So you think her career basically was derailed from this being in this graphic scene, huh?
I can't think of any other reason.
Wow. But the movie did okay, right? Or...
Yeah, I liked both the first Hostel movie. I couldn't really watch the third one. It sucked enough that I couldn't watch 7 or 8 minutes of it.
Is it a, I guess that's the genre that you would call torture porn. Or, I mean, right?
Well, I wouldn't call it torture porn.
What do you call it? Torture horror?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, because, I mean, I feel like Saw kind of pioneered that, but I don't know. I mean, maybe it came before.
Yeah, I think the Japanese and the Koreans were doing it back in the 60s.
Yeah, the Japanese, they have a good horror. I think The Ring was originally Japanese, right?
Yeah, my problem with Japanese movies is they're in Japanese.
Right. But
which,
when
that's pretty much incomprehensible gibberish.
Well, they remake it. It's often good. At least the ones that make it over here usually are good ones. But The Ring kind of crapped out after the second one. The second one was bad.
I had to watch the second one. I don't think I made it through. I'm not really sure. The first one is fine. I only saw it when it first came out. I don't think I would revisit it. It just does. I don't remember it as being that compelling a film.
Now, I think the best horror movie of all time is The Shining.
Maybe.
But what could you put up there?
Well, the very first, the James Whale version of Frankenstein is very, very good. I mean, it's more than a horror movie, though. It's
a monster movie.
It's a monster movie, and the monster's very sympathetic. And I actually believe that Boris should at least have been nominated for an Oscar for that performance.
For the monster Frankenstein.
The Frankenstein monster. His name isn't Frankenstein. It's the monster.
Right. Well, that's been done to death. I think De Niro's one pretty much sucked.
Yeah, it's very hard to watch. Hammer did like an entire series of Frankenstein movies back in the 60s and 70s with Peter Cushing Peter Cushing played Dr. Frankenstein, and Christopher Lee, who's now a Knight of the Empire, played the monster in several of them.
Is that the one that has the Frankenstein's Bride? Or is that just Boris Karloff?
That's Bride of Frankenstein. It's directed by James Whale, and it stars Boris Karloff and Elsa Lanchester.
How is that?
It's a good movie. It's about as good as the original. It's more demented because you have this secondary character, Dr. Pretorius, introduced, and he has this really weird hobby. He creates these tiny people that he keeps in glass jars. It's never really explained.
Yeah, I heard about that's some gross shit. But anyways, because the whole, like, did Dracula and Frankenstein's monster and, like, these other kind of characters, like the Wolfman, are they all kind of the development of one studio? Because I know that they're...
I think they were Universal. I'm not really sure. I think they were Universal. The Dracula movie that most people think of as the first one, which it isn't, let's call it the Todd Browning Dracula, because that's who directed it, Todd Browning, who also directed Freaks, which is a fucking fantastic movie, and The Unholy Three, two versions of The Unholy Three, Talkie and Asylum. The first Dracula, or that Dracula movie, is a really, really good movie, and there's, like, so many eerie scenes in it and such cool shit in it. It kind of shaped the public perception of vampires and the public perception of Dracula, even though it departs quite a bit from the character as portrayed in the book.
But the originator of Dracula wasn't it Nosferatu, or is that...
You mean the first film version of Dracula.
Oh, wasn't that based on a book?
Yeah, it's based on a book by Bram Stoker called Dracula. The reason that you don't have, like, readily available copies of Nosferatu is they were destroyed because of a lawsuit filed by Stoker's family.
And that's why it wasn't called Dracula. It was called Nosferatu, I think.
It isn't Dracula. It would not survive a trademark violation suit today.
A copyright, yeah.
Well, no, it wasn't a copyright suit. It was a trademark suit.
Oh, okay.
You can't really copyright. I mean, I guess you can copyright like certain things. You can copyright the content of a book or a film, but you can't copyright like the title or certain elements of the characterizations. Like I could write a book called Moby Dick.
I see, because you can't copyright a title, but if it's a lifted plot, obviously that can be challenged.
The plot's different enough,
right.
And the vampire is really quite different. He's the closest I've seen to that vampire character is in Salem's Lot, and also the remake of Nosferatu the Vampire, which was made by Werner Herzog, starring the great Klaus Kinski.
Oh, that's good?
Yeah, it's totally worth a watch.
Well, have you seen the movie Daybreakers?
Yeah, not a fan.
It was okay, but they had a good explanation of, like, what, you know, why vampires might end up looking like Nosferatu.
There's been a few films that dealt with that. I think at least one of the Blades deals with that.
Blood deprivation, you know, creates the ugly vampire.
And there's totally room in the vampire pantheon for that vampire. Underworld vampires are pretty cool too. I've never watched the Twilight series at all, and never will.
Don't.
Yeah, I will never watch that, or Vampire Diaries or any of that stuff. There's just like...
Or True Blood.
I watched the first few seasons of True Blood and thought that... Well, it jumped the shark early. I think it jumped the shark like at the end.
Way early.
Yeah.
After a while, I couldn't take it. It was just like, all right, too much shit here.
Because it became like... it became like... a book, one of those books that has Fabio on the cover. It became like one of those things.
A Harlequin novel.
Yeah, except with vampires.
It became very goofy after a while too. But yeah, I thought it started out good. Interesting, nonetheless. But good concept.
Let's not forget the Anne Rice vampire books and one movie, two movies based on her stuff. No, three movies. Two movies. There's Interview with the Vampire, which is actually a conflation of Interview with the Vampire and the second book, The Vampire Lestat. And then there's the movie Queen of the Damned, which is based on the third book.
That movie sucked.
Yeah, it's really bad, and I don't think they ever bothered to do a film version of Tale of the Body Thief because it just wouldn't translate well as a movie.
It's almost so bad it's good, though. It's one of those. It's really ridiculous. Aaliyah's in that. She was later killed. But there's definitely a few good ones, but I mean, what do you think of the Bram Stoker movie, the Bram Stoker Dracula with Gary Oldman?
Oh, the Francis Ford Coppola version. It's pretty true to the book in most ways. It's a mess. I mean, as a film, it's just like it's all over the fucking place, but it's really watchable.
Yeah, I mean, I think like when you look at that and you compare it to Nosferatu, though, there are a lot of similar plot points.
I can't think of any, but you know,
well,
I mean, there's a vampire and he bites people. I guess if you consider that to be a major plot point in a vampire story, then
no, they have the whole storyline where the husband is like being made to travel somewhere, and then the wife gets attacked by Nosferatu. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm misremembering. But yeah.
My favorite scene from the Coppola Dracula is where Mina comes out in the garden and sees Lucy on a bench, and she's being fucked by a wild beast, and it's Dracula transformed into a wolf character, and you don't really see a whole lot of attention paid to like Dracula's ability to be a wolf.
Yeah, he gets embarrassed by his appearance in front of her. You know?
Yeah, it's very clear that he's like, "Whoops, dude, sorry, I like to look like this when I fuck."
He's like, this is not the side I wanted you to see me right away. You know?
It's cold. There was shrinkage. That's.
it's quite a scene there.
I like the girl who plays Lucy. I can't remember the actress's name. She's a redhead, and she, I think, you know, deserves to be tied up. Also, I'm a big Winona Ryder fan.
Hell yeah. Yeah, she's perfect for that role.
I think Winona Ryder is pretty awesome anyway. Like, I was a big fan of hers. Like, back when she got busted for shoplifting, I went on a free Winona campaign, although I don't think she ever, like, spent any time in jail.
No, I think she got off pretty
much. Yeah, she ultimately got off because she, I guess, had prescriptions for all of the drugs that she had. And she was like, yeah, I just got fucked up and took some stuff. And they were like, oh, okay. And you know.
But she's resurrected herself.
She's a highly respected actress, and I like her, and she's still cute.
Yeah, she hasn't aged much. I just saw her in the movie, what was that movie she was in? It's like a gangster movie. Winona Ryder. It's with like the guy who played Zod in the new Superman movie, Iceman. That's what it was. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I haven't seen it. I think it's in my Netflix queue.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. Very good fellow scene, but it has a lot of text.
I didn't watch it at first because I just automatically thought it was a biography of the basketball player George Gervin.
No, it's kind of a cross between Taxi Driver and Goodfellas. Not as in depth as those, but in any case, have you seen what is the latest? Any of the zombie movies that you like? Because I know we talked a little bit about it, but you're a fan of the original Living Dead movie?
Well, I don't consider that to be an original zombie film. I consider that to be a radical shifting of the zombie paradigm. I like the Val Lewton film with a zombie. I like White Zombie. These are movies from like the 30s. I like Night of the Living Dead a lot, but you know I don't consider it to be like one of the original zombies.
Those zombies aren't scary though.
Those zombies are scary, but they don't move.
No, they aren't. I said they're not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can outrun them. Nobody does, but you can. I really like 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later. Those are probably my two favorite zombie movies.
Yeah, those are good, but, you know, I checked them out recently. I mean, I thought they were okay, but, like, they aren't actually zombies, right? I mean, technically speaking.
They're zombies. Like, they die and they come back to life and they want to eat people's heads.
They don't die in that. They just like they get the rage. It's like
yeah,
a virus.
The rage virus. Yeah.
But it's not. They don't actually undergo death. Like
true. They undergo, well, yeah, they do. Their body functions cease very quickly, and then they immediately resurrect. But
okay.
those zombies, like, if you deprive them of sustenance. I forget what the time frame is. It's explained in the second movie. They do die.
They starve to death.
Good. Yeah, they starve to death, yeah.
But, man, yeah, they're very scary. I mean, that's kind of the fast, I think they were the, well, you know actually who did the first fast-moving zombie was the guy who did Return of the Living Dead, the guy, you know, the zombies that just want brains. I think that was the first, that actually, that original movie was awesome. Very funny, too.
So a movie called, I think it's called House of the Dead. It stars Jürgen Prochnow from Das Boot. And that's like, I think those are kind of fast-moving zombies.
Yeah, that they're much scarier for sure. I didn't like the Brad Pitt one too much. It was okay.
It's okay. It's pretty good. I mean, they spent a lot of money on it, and it shows. It's pretty good. I don't think it's as good as Shaun of the Dead.
No, but Shaun of the Dead is both straight up comedy.
But Shaun of the Dead is a pretty awesome movie.
It is. It is. Even the remake with Sarah Polley of I think it's Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead with Ving Rhames and Sarah Polley, who I think is a real dish. Who else? There's some other people who were. Mekhi Phifer, I think, is in that from 8 Mile.
Right. Yeah, it's a cast of characters there. The guy
it's a good cast.
The guy from Modern Family.
Yeah.
And it's a funny. It also has some funny moments in it, but it's pretty. Those zombies are scary. But they came out after 28 Days Later, so they kind of copied from that.
Yeah, that's post 28 Days.
They really revolutionized it, and they actually weren't very high budget. The first one.
No, I love 28 Weeks Later. I think that's just a fucking incredible movie, and the whole bit where he leaves his wife to get eaten by zombies.
Yes, and you know the only reason they haven't made another one is because the two main people involved are like, hey, they're not speaking and they hate each other.
That's too bad, because I'd love to see a 28 Months Later.
Oh yeah, so the but it's a played out genre at this point. I mean,
zombies have totally jumped the shark. Like, I actually had a zombie movie script that I was prepared to pitch, and I even had kind of an in to pitch it, and then wound up just not even bothering.
Yeah, it's oversaturated for sure. And
yeah.
Then I, you know, the Walking Dead thing is I never really could watch that dumb show. I mean, I tried watching it.
First two seasons are fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very non-pretentious. The opening scene, if I remember correctly, is almost completely lifted from 28 Days Later.
Yes, but it works. And the first season was really good. I would have to say.
Yeah, first season was really good, and it was a filler, so everyone was pleasantly surprised. The first two Resident Evil movies are pretty good.
Really?
Yeah,
I thought they were all garbage, but I mean, I haven't seen any of them. I've seen like the later sequels.
No, those suck. The later ones suck, but the first two are pretty good.
So those are zombie kind of futuristic thing going on.
It's genetic engineering, and it's all corporate work, and it's explained to us over the course of several movies, so it's not like you're privy to the whole thing at the first viewing.
So the first one's good, the second one's good, but not the rest.
Third's all right. After that, it becomes just kind of redundant.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, you're gonna have a hard time. I mean, I think there are some new series out there right now that have sort of semi zombies, but they're still trying to go strong on TV. I forget what it is. The Strain, I think, is one.
I haven't seen it.
But it seems to have zombies of some sort or some kind of eating flesh individuals. But yeah, so that's played out. Vampires are played out. All kinds of these it's just weird how they became so big. I mean, what does that say about, why are people so fascinated with these creatures? And why did they become so popular?
There's always been a fascination, I think, with vampires.
Well, but I mean, these zombies and... But, I mean, what does it mean? What is the, like, deeper meaning of the societal fascination of it, you know?
Probably nothing. They're cool.
Yeah, right. I mean, I remember they used to have crossovers on comics with, like, Superman versus, you know, Dracula. Maybe they should do something like that. But I'm just trying to think of new concepts you could do with him. I mean, I think they have a new Dracula movie out now, because Dracula Untold.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about the plot?
No, nothing.
Yeah, they have to say Untold because... You know, we've heard it so many times. Like, well, this is Untold. I don't know. I mean, I think they even had a series that they can't. Yeah, they did. I started watching it. The Dracula TV series, it got canceled.
There were at least two Dracula comic book storylines. Marvel did one, Castle of Dracula, back in the 70s. It was, at least originally, it was drawn and rendered by Gene Colan, who's a fantastic artist, best remembered for Iron Man. And at the same time, what the people who put out Creepy, Eerie, and Vampirella, I can't remember the publishing company's name, but they also did a Dracula series in, I think it was in Eerie. And it was drawn by Tom Sutter, who also drew, I think, Werewolf by Night for Marvel. Marvel early 70s, heavily on horror. And they had, like, started with Ghost Rider, and then Son of Satan kind of branched out from the Ghost Rider universe. It was about a guy who actually Son of Satan. Then there was Werewolf by Night.
Are these terms, though, are these names of characters, like, public domain?
What, Dracula?
And Wolfman and...
Well, Wolfman, I don't think anybody used the term Wolfman. It's Werewolf by Night.
Werewolf, I guess, is generic.
And Dracula passed into public domain long, long ago.
Frankenstein still belongs to somebody, right?
No, I'm pretty sure no. The Frankenstein makeup that is associated with Boris Karloff and subsequently Glenn Strange and Bela Lugosi, who also donned the suit, is still licensed to by Universal.
Oh, they just came out with a, it was called, like, what was it called? It was a Frankenstein movie, like Frankenstein, some flop that just came out. Frankenstein, yeah.
There's a few. I'm not really sure which one you mean. I think there's one called I, Frankenstein.
That's the one I was thinking of, yeah. I, Frankenstein. Didn't see it, but I heard it sucked. So, they haven't really come up with a good one yet. But like you said, the old ones are good, so might as well check those out.
The Monster's a very sympathetic character.
The Fly is an awesome movie.
Which are you talking about? The one made in 1986 with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis?
Yeah,
The
original too. They're both good.
There's also a sequel to The Fly with Eric Stoltz.
That sucks.
Yeah, it sucks.
I mean, there's really no reason to make a sequel to that movie. I mean, it's like Pet Sematary. You know, that was pretty okay, but any kind of sequel is stupid. I mean, really bad with Edward Furlong. You know, there's no reason to make a sequel to that. What about the Freddy's stuff?
Nightmare on Elm Street. I really am only a fan of, like, the first three movies.
I think three is the best.
Yeah, 3 is really good.
And versus Jason, Freddy vs. Jason is good.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun movie. It's probably the best Friday the 13th movie. It's funny. But you know, I like versus movies. I mean, I think Superman vs. Batman looks like it's just good.
I'm probably one of the few people who actually approves of Ben Affleck.
Although I saw Gone Girl, I thought it was stupid, but
Batman and Gone Girl.
Ben Affleck is the main guy in Gone Girl.
He's not playing Batman.
Oh, no, sorry. No. But he's playing himself, I guess. Batman, he should be good for Batman, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing an older Batman, so it's closer to the Batman of the graphic novel Dark Knight Returns.
And it would make sense that, like, Batman would be, like, some rich dickhead like Ben Affleck, you know?
Yeah.
Who recently got into some trouble on Bill Maher.
Depending on who you ask, either he got either he looked stupid or he made Bill Maher look stupid. I'm gonna go with Bill Maher made him look stupid. And I'm not like a huge Bill Maher fan. I think that he's often over the years been a knee jerk liberal and not in a good way. But in this particular, I think he's been right on the money, and people are scared to say it, and Ben Affleck falls right into that category of people who are just scared to say it.
Well, for those of people who didn't hear what it was, what can you explain what happened? Because I watched it, and I was not sure exactly how, you know, what the...
Bill Maher's stance is that this whole concept that gets spouted to us of Islam basically being that radical Islam is the problem. Bill Maher is saying, no, Islam is the problem, and all Islam is radical Islam. And he's right. I've been saying fear.
So, yeah, I mean, and he's disputing that. I didn't really understand what he was saying in response. Like
Ben Affleck?
Was he just saying, no, it's not true? I mean, how can you...
He was giving the standard liberal bullshit, which is Christians do terror too. It's like, no, we don't. I mean, unless you want to count, like, the guy who blew up the Oklahoma City courthouse because he happened to be a Lutheran. Oh, Christians don't do that. Jews don't do that. A Jew might do something like that, or a Christian might do something like that. It's not the same thing. It's a religion of evil, and it got co-opted by terrorists back in our club.
Well, I mean, if they never were intervened upon by Western forces, that they would still have the same level of
what?
And that,
what?
You heard me?
Really? Really? You're actually coming up with this as a belief?
No,
seriously?
I'm saying that to what extent was their militancy against the West fostered by our intervention, or was it just...
There's no fucking intervention. Islam invaded Europe. What the fuck are you talking about? We took it to the fucking source. Islam invaded Europe and built mosques as far inland as fucking France. Jesus. Do they not
back
history anymore?
What, you mean, you're talking about during the Middle Ages?
That would be right, yes.
Because what I'm saying is that there is like a radicalized quality that, I mean, I think happens just from, I mean, can't that happen if you intervene on a culture, you know, over and over again, they're going to develop a hate for...
No, it has nothing to do with that.
So they would have had the same amount of hate whether we intervened or not.
Absolutely. And I can cite a few historical things that people who doubt that can fucking look up, but they won't because they can't fucking read. But Hassani Saba is an interesting person to read about. He is pretty much the founder of modern terrorism, created the sleeper cell, created the sleeper agent. This is back in the 12th century. Very, very interesting guy. And coincidentally, the family that owns Kuwait is the Saba family. Just saying.
Okay. Now, do you trust Saudi Arabia?
No, fuck. Why would I?
So why are we their ally?
Because it's too risky to not be their ally. And no, it doesn't have anything to do with oil, crazy conspiracy people.
What is the risk?
The risk is they could really export terror on a fucking grand scale if they wanted to. They have unbelievable wealth.
Why don't we just steal it?
Steal their wealth?
Yeah, to take their country.
Yeah, I don't think that would go over so well. I don't think... Are you asking me if I think that's a bad idea? I don't think it's a bad idea.
No, but I could. I'm just saying, like, I mean...
I think we should take over their fucking country, put them to the fucking sword, and convert them to Christianity or Judaism. Your choice, guys.
Yeah, well...
You love Jesus or do you love Moses? Pick one.
Right. So you think it should be like that, huh? Now, I think, though, that the best way to convert, well, I mean, there's really no, like, you don't really believe that there's going to be ultimately peace there in that area, do you?
No. Not until we wipe out Islam.
But that's not going to happen.
No, because it's politically incorrect.
But I mean, it's just,
right.
Like, Islam's here.
In fact, I mean, look at what's happening. ISIS has pretty much taken over Syria and Iraq, and they only have, like, 40,000 people in their army.
Why do you think they're calling them their self-identified name of the Islamic State? Seems like that pisses off a lot of Islamic people, doesn't it?
Well, they are considered too radical. Well, it's a different form of radicalism. So it's not because the rest of Islam is like, oh, these people are bad because of, like, the reasons that we think they're bad. It's because they think they're bad because they don't fulfill the tenets of their particular brand. This is something that people here don't fucking understand. If they haven't been, don't fucking get it.
Well, what do you want to explain? I mean, what is it they need to understand?
What is it they need to? All they need to understand is that Islam is the problem. That's all they need to understand.
But you can't eradicate it.
Yeah, you can. You can totally eradicate it. It just won't happen. You can totally eradicate it, but you're not going to do it by doing things like Obama's drone strikes.
No, but I mean...
And the coalition of the unwilling.
No, yeah, it's not going to... It's just going to be like
It's going to make it worse, and then you'll have, like, people like who are basically Obama bots saying, see, we told you that if we pissed them, they would be mad. And so we should be nicer to them, and then we're nicer to them, and then they'll do something, like, completely unacceptable, and then we send a few drones in and some military forces, and then lose again, and because it's not enough. And I mean, hopefully we'll get, like, an extreme right-wing administration and Congress who will just say, either pull out of there completely and let them fucking eat each other. Sorry, that's Africa. Or just nuke them. Just turn it all to fucking green glass and parking lots.
Well, they're not going to do that. But I do see that this kind of mow the grass type thing is what foreign policy is today. I mean, is that necessarily, like, if it's an intractable problem,
maybe just mowing the grass is the only way to deal with it.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody in this administration would have the balls to do that.
But that's what they're doing.
No, that's not what they're doing. If that was what they were doing, but by mowing the grass, you mean seek to eradicate them?
No. It's just like you just keep bombing them intermittently as they, you know, as they're created. You know, you can't uproot them completely, but you.
It's not really working well against ISIS, is it? Didn't they just take over Baghdad?
No, they didn't.
Aren't they about to take over Baghdad?
No.
Really?
But they're going to take over Kobani.
I can get a headline here. Oh, fuck, they just changed. Oh, here it is. Yeah. This is on the very right-wing CNN that basically says they're about to take over Baghdad.
That's no good.
I can't have it on my screen without that stupid music.
Jingle flight. No, it's fine.
The article says, and perhaps they're lying. Perhaps the mainstream media has degenerated into lies. God, how could that happen? But they're saying.
Well, that must be a new development.
Yeah, they're saying. This no, this is like 5 days now. They're saying that they're about to roll into Baghdad and they're about to take over like not southern Syria but northern Syria.
Right. Yeah. So which
means that the policy over there, as in our policy, along with like our friends, and I'm using scare quotes here, has failed.
Yeah. Yep, but the question is, do we have the stomach as a country to succeed on a policy that would work?
I think we have the stomach as a country, but it the administration and Congress doesn't have the stomach for it.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I think we're seeing a lot of flag waving from both sides of the aisle in Congress, but they're basically just saying, yeah, let's send more drones, you know. Which we're doing, and it's not working.
Well, you see, like, a parallel, I think, with the way that we kind of, after World War One, we kind of neglected Germany,
after World War One, we began a policy of isolation.
And then it blew up on us.
That's, you know why? Because isolationism blows up on you.
Yep.
And I should clarify to our listeners, I've spoken with a lot of people and they get confused at my use of the term isolationism. It's a real specific term. It actually means something. It doesn't mean something with which you disagree. It means a policy of non-interventionism in foreign affairs. It's the opposite of interventionism as a policy. A lot of people apparently don't understand this.
What would they think it would be?
Well, I had a friend say, this is during the Bush administration, he said, America isn't isolationist. Nobody likes it. What you mean is you disagree with our foreign policy. But your disagreement does not equate to the U.S. having a policy of isolationism. You're making up, or you're appropriating a term that means something else in English. And you're assigning a different meaning to it. And in each case, like, I've had this happen like maybe 10 or 12. In each case, it's been a far.
Say in each case what?
It's been a foreigner, like someone from a degenerate European country.
Oh. So anyway, so we got like this. The situation. I mean, it's never going to be. It's never going to be really like satisfactorily resolved unless we go in there with massive, like, you know, Gulf War level.
That's not massive. I mean, if we were to do it on even a pre-surge level, you got to remember, our kill ratio is like 100 to 1. We kill lots of fucking bad guys.
Oh yeah, we're good at it.
Yeah, yeah, we're great at it.
But is there the political will to do that? I mean,
not on the part of our administration.
Well, what I'm saying is, can a Republican in 2016 run on basically more war in the Middle East?
No, and no Republican will.
So what are they going to say? Because
it's going to be Rand Paul, and he's going to say we need to kind of balance our interventionism with planned isolationism. It's a disagreement that I have with Mr. Paul.
Well, I mean, I think it's just, you know, he's part of the zeitgeist, because I think a lot of people just, they're sick of it, you know, they're sick of the whole thing.
But he's wrong. It's and I like Rand Paul. I think he's right about most things. Well, the thing that he articulates now that he's a Republican and not a silly libertarian. I mean, if we were to listen to, like, his libertarian ideas, I think a lot of them would strike us as silly. And if everyone, like, in his position ran on that kind of platform, the Senate would be complete Democrats. Libertarians put more Democrats in office than Democrats do.
Well, he's got the wind at his back now. I think that he couldn't get a better. I mean, because Hillary's going to come off to the right of him on foreign policy. But
she has to. But she's not going to be running.
That's your prediction. Not even going to run.
I didn't say that. I said she won't be running for president in the general election. I mean, unless she runs as an independent. Her party will desert her and betray her once again. The media will desert her and betray her once again. Or she may just not decide to run. That's a possibility. She is not going to be able to distance herself sufficiently from the administration for which she worked. She can't do it.
I see. So she's too closely, even though she's criticized them.
Oh, she's kind of criticizing them, like, in hindsight now, but it's too late. She was already part of all of this shit. Elizabeth Warren is already crafting her strategy by openly criticizing the Obama administration, and she's not going to get a voter. She's not going to convert any Republicans. She'll get a lot of Democrats on her side.
So she's going to be the nominee?
I think so.
Well, and you think that the corporate Democrats are going to, like, want her? I don't think so.
Oh, dude, seriously? You think that the things she's saying are things she actually believes?
I don't know. I mean, she seems pretty earnest.
No. Come on. When you're planning your strategy at this point, and Hillary can't do this because she's already a known quantity, you pander to the extreme fringe of your party. In this case, the radical left. That's who she's pandering to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But once you get a nomination, you run as more or less a centrist, just like your predecessor did.
Well, she's doing the Rand Paul, the reverse Rand Paul.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, and she's not bad, though. She's pretty good.
It'll work. I mean, she'll get the nomination. She'll be defeated flat out. I mean, she'll be lucky if she wins 2 or 3 states.
So it'll be like McGovern.
Actually, it won't be that bad. She'll take the regular blue, the states that always vote blue. It's not going to be like, the major one is Ronald Reagan in 1984, where he won every state except one. I mean, think about that. New York voted for Reagan.
Hey, he was a movie star, man.
More than a movie star. He was, as presidents go, he was a fucking rock star.
But he was he had a head start, man. He's like, you know, you got to give him, you have to understand he's an actor. So people already knew him.
One of the reasons why he was so good in that role. And he wasn't, like, really that great an actor in films, although I like him in a few movies.
He's okay, yeah.
He's great in The Killers.
Yeah, that was good. And
he's great in that movie.
He was. So I think
he's pretty good in Dark Victory.
I haven't seen that one. But I'm
Humphrey Bogart and Dee Davis are also in it.
He was sort of like a John Wayne guy, right?
Yeah, he basically played himself thrust into these larger than life situations. Yeah. I mean, he also did like his share of dramas and comedies though.
Yeah, I remember didn't he do like cigarette commercials?
He did cigarette commercials. He also did a comedy with a chimp called Bedtime for Bonzo. A lot of people made fun of him for it.
Well, the famous line for the Gipper is like, I don't know what movie that was, but
that's the Newt Rockne story.
Oh, okay. That became like a major deal with him. But yeah, he was good. He was a good campaigner, good politician.
He was good all around. He was a good president. History has, like, even though like the left hated him and the hatred grew for him like into the early 2000s, the history books have been very kind to him, as they will be to his successor, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush 41.
Now, under Obama, the top 1% had done probably better than they did in Reagan.
Yeah, but the thing...
Why did I hate him?
I don't think we should focus on the top 1%. That's not really where the focus lies, because the rich are always going to be rich. It's not like the rich are going to be poor, or that they should be poor. And it's we'll always have the poor with us. I think it will be specific that. But what's important under the Obama administration is median incomes for middle-class families have declined significantly. That's a new one.
But, I mean, is that his policy? I mean, he hasn't really done much.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying, is that really his policy?
To shape the economy? Yeah, no, it's whatever he's done to shape the economy, estimated middle-class incomes. I mean,
right.
You can say, well, there's way more rich people than there used to be, so that sucks. Or you can say, there's lots more poor people than there used to be, and that sucks. Okay, that's fine, but I don't think that should be the focus. We're always going to have the rich, we're always going to have the poor. But the middle class is kind of the backbone of America. So that's something to watch out for. I don't think that it can be fixed in 2 years. I don't even think that it's a priority in terms of fixing.
No, I think it's the new normal.
Yeah, I think it's become the new normal. Some of the salaries that I've been offered lately while looking for work are kind of funny.
Hey, they're trying to get away with it, but I mean...
Yeah, although, like, I signed up with a temp agency, like, last week, and they're totally nice to me, and, you know, I passed all their tests and interviewed well, and I asked the guy I was like, so what's my rate? And he quotes me a really stupid figure, and I said, that's really on the low end of things, and he said, well... what would it take? And I quoted him a figure that was 25% more than that. And, okay. Yeah, we'll do that for you. And I was like, so really all I have to do is ask.
I see. So you just got to be more upfront with your demand.
Really all you have to do is just say, no, I won't work for that. And obviously have some talent and skills and experience. But I guess that you know, but 30 probably willing to work for that amount of money, and it's like, yeah, you know, awesome, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's, you know, people are just having to deal with less, and then prices are going up, so
Prices are going up, but not as much as people think. We're still in a very low inflationary period. Inflation's like close to dangerously low. It's like, I think, 1.5% now.
So
that's not good. People are like, whoa, low, you know, inflation's bad. No, inflation isn't bad. A 4% inflationary rate is your friend.
And Indeed it is. Well, listen, Zorg, we're at the end of our time here, so I guess we'll wrap it up here. We didn't get to talk about Elvis, but I guess we'll talk about him next time.
Okay, well, we'll do that. He was pretty good. That's my main commentary.
All right. Very in-depth there. Yeah. So we'll go into him. There's some interesting stuff that's come out recently. But we'll talk soon. Thank you again, Zorg.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Bye, kids.
Bye.
Get off my lawn, kids.